Alright, just starting in Nedarim. So we wanted to just spend some time on introducing Nedarim and how Nedarim work. So the first thing that we have to discuss about Nedarim is what's called the Rishonim and the Farshim call it Ikar Neder. If you were to do a neder properly, what's the proper way to do a neder? That happens to be a focus between the Rishonim. The Ran here brings down one side, and then if you look here in Tosfot and the Rosh, they seem to bring down the other side. That has to do with an issue called Hadpasa. Now Hadpasa means when you make a neder, do you have to somehow connect it to something that is already restricted or asur? And I mean, can you say have a neder that stands alone, that does not reference anything that is asur, or do you have to somehow connect it back to an item that is already asur and say, this will be like this? And that's the idea of hadpasa, that you're now saying whatever this item is will look like that other item. And that's the question about ikar neder. So if you, in the Ran here in his introduction also mentioned, it says the ikar neder, it's actually in the narrow lines, that's towards the end of the narrow lines in the Ran. It's the dot there. It says ikar neder who? Shumar davar zeh asur alai. So that the ikar neder is that you say that this item is restricted to me. Benchi pisu b'dvar acher, bench lo pisu. Whether you connect it to another item or not, whether you create some sort of connection that would make it asur or not. Zeu neder amur b'torah. According to the Ran, that's the neder in the Torah. So the requirement of hadpasa is not necessary to make it into a neder. It's just an added bonus, and if you do it, you gotta do it right. That's what the Ran points out. But as long as you do it right, that'll also be a neder. Whereas if you look in the Rosh here, if you look in Tosfos here, I mean, just look on the Rosh on the right side. I hope your Gemara's have the Rosh on the right side. Alright, the Rosh on the right side, just when it gets to the dot there, if you look over there, he says, Ikar neder amur b'torah hu shimatis achefetz b'davar ha-ne'esar ayidei yisurfeh. You see, the Rosh says straight out that the Ikar Neder in the Torah is that you use Hadpasa, that you take the Chafetz, this item that you want to make restrict, and you somehow compare it or connect it to an item that's already Asur, a Karban, a Hekdesh, something else. And so you see from him and many other Rishonim that believe that a Neder requires Hadpasa to be a what's called Ikar Neder Min HaTorah. So that's the first issue. The second issue we'll get to, and this is what actually we'll get to in the Gemara later today, but we may as well do it now in the introduction, is what's the difference between a Shavua and a Neder? We're going to spend time on Shavuos. We saw in Ksubos a lot of times the requirement for a Shavua. And what's the difference between a Shavua versus a Neder? So the Gemara lays out the basic foundation of what the difference between a Shavua and a Neder is. Where it says that a neder is that, as a classic chakira, that a neder is that you oser the chafetz, the object, on yourself, right? That you, it's not you, there's no requirement on the guy or on the individual, but rather this object you've now made into something that is restricted. So, I mean, equivalent of hektesh, or a korban, where the object itself now takes on a level of kedusha. Here it's not kedusha, but restriction, and therefore you can't interact with the object, because
the other person also, yeah?
It's what they do. You can't get hanok from them what they do.
They're my brother.
Right, you can't. It's harder to understand how you'd make the person themselves usher to you. I mean, I guess you could be usheri, by a man and a wife, you could do it. Alright, the shavua deals with the subject. The person themselves, right, is, the way the Gemara says it, is kasar nafsha min achiv, that you restrict yourself from doing something. So you say, I will not eat, I will not sleep, I will not do something. That means that it's not, sorry, the object itself is not restricted, it's you are restricting yourself from these class of objects. And that's an ikar difference between a shvua and a neder. That's what the Gemara lays out as a difference. The problem comes up is that the Gemara, in a number of places, talks about a shvua that's done b'lashon neder and a neder that's done b'lashon shvua. And somehow you can create, but if the difference is such a stark line or stark difference between a shvua and a neder, how could it be that you could mix up the way that you would say a shvua and the way you would say a neder? Because by definition, the language should differentiate them, because if you're talking about the object versus talking about the individual, right, mixing up the lashonos should not be permitted. So the Ran himself believes that you can't chance that there's only one way to do a shvuah, one way to do a neder. And those gemaras that suggest that there could be a shvuah b'lashon neder, neder b'lashon shvuah, those are lav dafka. I mean, the gemara is just running through, and it happens to be in a sequence, an event, and mention neder, mention shvuah, and therefore it's going up. Whereas the Ramban believes that you could have a neder b'lashon shvuah or a shvuah b'lashon neder, but that they function in what's called a subpar way, which is that we'll see today, this is part of the Gemara, that'll be the next line in the introduction, is that we talk about what an ikar neder is, how you do a proper neder, but that doesn't necessarily mean that that's the only way. There are subpar ways to create a neder, something called a kinuyim and called yados ha-neder, which are extensions of making a neder, but don't use the most proper way to create a neder. So the Ramban believes that you can create a neder or shavua through the lashon of the other, but it will not be a full. It wouldn't be the best way to do it, but you could do it by what's called yadot neder or yadot shavua, that you'll create it as a subpar way to introduce these types of neder and shavua.
So the distinction between neder and shavua is all based on the subject of like, you know,
the subject and the object. Yeah.
Well, if the object can be the subject of the, you know, this thing is awesome.
Right.
Whereas I will not do it as a shavua, but I always understood it as a shavua being something positive, like I will do something, and the neder being something negative, I will not do something, but nobody understands it.
That is not correct, because you can make, I mean, shvuah, you can say, I'm sure that I will not eat. I mean, that's a classic type of shvuah. Right? And a neder, I mean, neder, you can say nidri mitzvos, which the Mishnayos will talk about, we'll get to later in the Dharm, which is that you take, I will do a mitzvah, you can take a neder to do a mitzvah.
Right. So when people say bli neder the whole time, it's absolutely never the case that it's a neder.
Right. It could be a neder, but the problem with the bli neder has to do with another function, which is that if you do something on a recurring basis, and then it becomes a chazaka, and that might be a form of neder. Meaning that if you do something regularly, then with that, if you don't say bli neder, it might become something where you are now held accountable to do that because you've done it this way for so much of a period.
Yeah.
So you have that, and generally, like if people, I don't know, take on a certain path, they fast on a certain day and they never say anything, but they keep, every year they do it, and after three times, then it might be considered a neder, and they might have to get hatars in the dharma not to fast.
Yeah.
It's a general, so that's probably a lot of times why people say bli neder, or they don't want to make a commitment where people feel it's a neder. I mean, most times it's kind of functioning as a neder. Alright, next thing is, does you need by shvua, neder for sure you don't, but by shvua, do you need the shem Hashem? That's the next thing, which is the basic source for that would be the Gemara in Shvua Se'edus, which says that you need the Hashem's name to create a shvua. You need a name of Hashem to be in there to make it into a real shvua. So is that true, the halacha? Do you need a shvua Hashem? Do you need that to have the shem Hashem or not have the shem Hashem in it? Can you have a shvua without the shem Hashem? So the Ran believes that you do not, that you can have a shvua. That's the whole idea of a shvua, and that's the whole idea of kinyan that we're going to discuss today. That is that you can have a shvuah without the Shem Hashem. The requirement of Shem Hashem is not, it's not the evidence that without it you do not have a shvuah, but rather it's a requirement maybe in, certain instances, for instance, maybe to get Malkus, right, going to the right, but in order to get Malkus, get punished for making a Shavuah, and get Malkus for the Shavuah, you'd have to use the Shem Hashem, because the Lotaseis, dealing with Shavuah, are Lotisai, Shem Hashem, Lokach
HaShav.
You make
the Shavuah for violating the Shavuah.
And whereas, otherwise, you'd still be restricted by a Shavuah, you may just not get Malkus for that Shavuah if you didn't use the Shem Hashem. There are other Rishonim, that believe that you need the shame, like Rabbeinu Tam and others who believe that you need the shame Hashem to create a shavua. You always need shame Hashem, and it's not a shavua without the being matzir the shame Hashem. So that's a little side point that'll come up, and let's just think anything else that's good to introduce here before we start. Alright, the last thing is, what are kinuyim? The Mishnah here is going to mention kinuyim and yados. So we talked about ikar neder and ikar shavua, which is the lashon that we want to use, the proper way to make a neder and the proper way to make a shavua. And that would be, again, either with hadpas or without hadpas, so going to different rishonim. But basically to say, okay, clearly what you're restricting and everything easy. There's something called kinuyim. Now, kinuyim, from the word kinuy, which is right, a nickname. So the Machlokas we're going to see actually in tomorrow's daf. You'll see the Machlokas Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, what kinu yom are. It's the Rabbi Yochanan says that they were lashon nachrim. It's foreign languages, and Reish Lakish believes it's lashonah shebadu lahem chachamim, lashonah that the chachamim made up. Right, so now, what were they doing? They were taking words like karban, which would be a classic word to use for neder, and then they came up with other versions of that word that would allow one to make a shavua without using the word karban or without using the direct word. Now, for the Ran, this works out well because he says, why would they do such a thing? Why would they use a different lashon for making a neder, making a shavua? And he says it's because they wanted to eliminate the Shem Hashem. They did not want to use the Shem Hashem when they were making Neder and Shavuah, so they came up with these kinuyim. That's exactly what Reish Lakish was doing. The whole idea of Lashon Badu Chachamim was to avoid using the Shem Hashem to come up with these special Lashonot. According to Rabbi Yochanan, these are language that they basically got, like a word, like if you take a word like in the English language, cul-de-sac. Right, which is a French word that we mispronounce, right? It's something in the English language we use the word, a French word that we've adopted, but we mispronounce. Or, for instance, psychology that's taken by the Hebrew language is called psychologia. So they take an English word and then they pronounce it incorrectly. So this is, what Shon Nachrim is that they took words from Hebrew, but the words were, became,
started.
Right, they were adjusted or mispronounced or something like that. So there's slight variations on the word karban that got incorporated in other languages. And then they work because when we get to other languages, it doesn't really, any language is basically, what is language, as the Ran says, it's an interesting line in the Ran. Language is basically an agreement between parties that a certain word will mean something. And language doesn't have an inherent meaning necessarily, it has meaning because the two of us understand the word to mean the same thing. So he says, if we all agree that this word means something, for instance, if we say everybody says cul-de-sac means a dead end or no, exit, and even though we're mispronouncing it, that word now becomes a functional word. So it says over here also, these kinuim are functional words because, as everybody agrees, that the word means something now at this point in time.
Except for Hebrew.
Except for Hebrew. Well, Hebrew, depending on how Hebrew, right, comes to pass. That's
the word is a thing and all the kind of Kabbalistic ideas around it.
Right. Is that really, basically another way of saying that, that intent is really what matters. So if there is an understanding that when a person uses a certain term, the intent is X, so it becomes accepted that
yes, right. Here on a higher level, the answer is yes. Here on a higher level, because it's not individual intent necessarily, but it's a social intent, right, that everybody would agree to that intent, right? And the last thing is something called yadot. Yadot, like in Tuma, you find it in other places, a yad, like just like when you carry a pot, and you carry it with the yad, doesn't mean you're not touching the pot itself, you're carrying it from an extension of the pot. Tuma works the same way. For instance, if you carry something, yadot hatuma, or items that are attached to the fruit that don't protect it but are something that you can carry it with. So for instance, maybe a stem that comes out that you can carry the fruit with the stem. Somehow that's a yada tuma. Maybe you can pass tuma or receive tuma possibly that way, depending on what the yad is. But that's something where it's functionally, you're not carrying the item itself, but you're using something that's attached to it or connected to it that does it. Same thing with nedarim and shuot. And that we discussed with the Ramban, who said that if you use the wrong lashon, you're creating it through yadota tuma, yadota shvua, yadota neder, are items where you take a nether, or you've taken a shavuah, but you didn't do it the right way, but you did it in a way that's close enough that we understand the meaning, or you're kind of grasping on the outside, and you're able to therefore create the nether, even though it's not the best way, and it's not using one of these kinuyim, but it's in the format, a general format that gets you close enough to being a nether that it turns out to be a nether.
What's the practical ramification of it not being the best way to do it? Now, if the mice ends up being an nether, so what?
All right, well, we're going to get to points where it's not, right, where nuances in the language are going to become then very important, right? When you build a nether, because you're on a fine line, right, what you say, then the every word's going to matter because of the inability. If you don't say it properly, then you're not going to end up with, whereas a, or you don't express the isur directly. So either there'll be more interpretation in what you say, and you have to figure out exactly what you were oser, versus when you directed, and we know exactly what you were oser. All right, so that's a quick introduction. Not so quick, but an introduction. Just getting on. The Gemara is here. Just in, this is a last point here. The Gemara's in the Dharma are going to be much, are much shorter. The Dapim in general are shorter. But the accepted interpretation, or people learned in the Dharma with the Ran, that's because the Rashi here is not so well redacted or as clear as Rashi in other places. It probably is not. It may not even be Rashi that's written here on the Dharma. And therefore, it's become accepted. They use the Ran's Perish, and the Ran's Perish is very extensive. It's much more verbose and extensive, and he'll go on to different topics also. So therefore, the Dapim are taken up with the Ran rather than the Ikar Gemara. And we'll try, in general, we'll use the Ran as the interpretation. We'll point out when there are other interpretations besides that of the Ran. All right.
The language is different. Yeah. The style
of the writing in the Gemara. Yeah, I didn't mention that, but that's it probably is true in general. You'll find I don't know if I could say that outright, but it has more of a you'll see that if you, I saw it yesterday actually. I'll see, I pointed out today when we learned the Daf. There's certain times where the Gemara, one of the textually the Gemara in the Babel is very good at what I call transitional words. Which the Yerushalmi failed at very bad. The Yerushalmi, one of the big things in Yerushalmi is that you have statements or just clips of, and it's unclear whether they're questions, statements, answers, because they're missing key transitional words. Like in language, we'd say, you know, if you put a question mark at something, then you know that it's a question. But here, where you don't punctuate, right, how do you know it's a question? So the Gemara is here, in general, clearly state when it's a question or not by using Meitavei, the Hatanya, right? They use these transitional words that clearly indicate, or Tashma, here we come to bring a proof. So the Gemara uses these transitional words to help you understand where the Gemara is breaking and when it's asking a question, when it's not asking a question. And Yerushalmi is missing that. And you see that with certain Masechta in the Bavli that were either less redacted or less learned, that they also don't have as many of those transitional words. And I don't know if that's what he's referring to, but it might be. I can point out one place today, maybe, if we get to it. We'll see that, where there's something like that. All right. So here we start the Mishnah. Kol kinuyei nidarim kinidarim. So anytime, if we use the kinui, which we explained, and we'll have to get into more detail again tomorrow's daf, whether you use a kinui, some sort of subpar lashon here, where you're doing this hadpasa. Hadpasa means that you're comparing it to another item that's kodesh. For instance, karbon. We'll use that as our classic example. If you don't use the word karbon, but you rather use the word konem, which would be the classic that Gemara mentions all the time, konem alai. That you use this word either because it's a lashon that Chachamim gave people to use instead of the word karban, or because it's a foreign language that adopted karban and got mispronounced. So kaneim nidarim kinedarim vicharamim kecharamim.
You don't have to use this on something. So what is the meaning of the kinuy?
So that's all right. So the Ran explains, and he's one of those that says that it doesn't have. You don't need hadpasa. He says, but if you do. If you look in the first, it's actually in the first wide line of the Ran. First wide, last word, Klomar. Says Klomar, Apple Peach, Nether Chal below Hatpasa. Even though a Nether works without a Hatpasa, Afilu Hachin im Hitbisu b'inyan shifesenu b'davar nadur, lo nabar asur. Right? So, but you have to. If you're going to do that, you must do it correctly. I mean, even though you don't need Hatpasa, if you do Hatpasa, you must do Hatpasa properly. And therefore, that's the point of Kinuyim. Kinuyim is a form of Hatpasa, and if you're going to do it, you have to do it properly. That's the point, according to the Ran. Right, obviously it's much easier according to those that think you need hadpasa, and kinuyim become very important because you must have hadpasa, and kinuyim fill in for what would otherwise be hadpasa. Okay. Gogarin aydarim kinedarim, b'charamim kecharamim, u'shvuot kishvuot, and same price as shvuot, u'nizirot kinizirot. So we have four categories, of which are someone obligating themselves to do something, now either again through shvuot, where they're obligating themselves, or restricting themselves, or an object to themselves. Those, all these items are function where not only if you do the proper way to say them, but even if you do a kinoi, even if you use these nicknames, it works. Now, ha'omer l'chaveru. The Mishnah jumps, right? This is actually not the Mishnah that goes gives an example. The question is, what's it giving an example of? Right? So now it says, Omer l'chaveiro, right? Mordrani mimcha, mufrushani mimcha, murchukani mimcha. So in all these cases, he used some sort of lashon, which means to separate, right? Somehow I distance myself, I separate myself, move myself, distance myself from you. Shani ochelucha, that I eat from you, or shani tomimlucha, or that I will taste anything from you. Then, asur, right, that is Asur, meaning that this is, I mean, I'll give away the Gemara here, but this is, the Gemara is now, the Mishnah switched to Yadot, okay, switched over to what's called Yad Neder, which we discussed earlier, is here, he didn't use anything, a normal form of Neder, but he used a Lashon that seems to intimate or indicate that he wants to restrict himself on this other, from this other individual, or he wants to restrict an object to himself. And therefore, he used these Lashonos, and these Lashonos will work as Lashonos of Nidarim. Since each one, if you read it, it's actually Mudrani Mimcha Shani Ochel Lecha, or Mudrani Mimcha Shani Otem Lecha. And then next, Mudrani Mimcha Shani Ochel Lecha Shani Otem Lecha. So each of these Lashonos are indications of a person's intent to create a nether, and that's enough to have a nether come into place or be a full-fledged nether, even though he didn't mention Korban at all, right, which is why it's a Yad. He didn't mention Korban, he didn't mention any Hadpasa, and he didn't even mention normal Lashon of nether, which is no Drani, you know, like I'm taking a nether here. I
mean, but it's a subject and object. If he feels that's what he's doing, that's good enough.
Right.
Would somebody else objective looking on and saying?
Well, generally we'll say that it's objective. Now, there are classifications. The Ron in his introduction also mentions the difference between Nidre Hektesh and Nidre Isser, which are actually what the subject of this Gemara is. Nidre Hektesh, you can only make Hektesh, you can only consecrate something that's yours. Right, you have to have full ownership over it, and then you can consecrate the object. Once you consecrate the object, it's restricted to everybody in the world. Right? Whereas here, Nidre Isur are very subjective, which is that you can actually restrict something you don't own. You can then restrict for another person, meaning that you have the ability to restrict on yourself, solely on yourself, what someone else or something else that's not yours, it doesn't belong to you, and that restriction will only apply to you. So your intent becomes very, very important here, because it has to be your what you intended to restrict, then it's important. That will come back later in the Masechta, what's called Hatarat Nedarim. How do you undo a Neder? If you have a problem when somebody makes a Neder, we have to look at intent and what the person had in mind when they made the Neder. But the mission is giving what they consider objective Lashonot, that we will say that the person's intent here was for a nether. Okay, so they're giving an objective yadot, that if you use this type of expression, the assumption is that it is a nether. Okay.
Would driving is not a classic nether?
No, because it would be, a classic nether would be something like, that it's, hey, asur alai ke karban, or something like that.
Even though they don't have to be mappis, but even there
he would say that if you said it clearly that I am restricting right on myself rather than mudrani right with mukhanim something but using the word yisur or asur something where it makes it clear what you're trying to do here it's less clear, it's more obscure.
When you say your hair is a lie, you're putting that with the person, other person as the subject, whereas with this Lashon, I'm the subject, so it sounds more like a shura. You say Mudrani, I am...
Right, but Mudrani Micha, She'eni, over here it is either She'eni Ochelach or She'eni Ochelach. There's actually a question of what the gears on the mission should be. Should it be She'ani or She'eni? But the intent here is that I will not eat from you. So it says, I'm taking an edit that I will not eat from your food. Okay, so there you're saying I'm restricting, there's two possibilities, right? Either I'm restricting myself to eat, which here it's not clear, I'm restricting myself to eat any of your items, which would be a shavua, right? Or, that I'm actually restricting your food to me.
Yeah, okay, but so it's not clear lashon he's putting it that way.
Right, although it depends how you read, if it's shani ochelecha or she'eni ochelech. I mean, it might be...
Shani would seem to be more...
Right, then more of a nether, where it's shani ochelech.
Mudrani, shani ochelecha, I'm just seeing myself from eating with you, that means...
Saying, so
that's
a question about whether you're talking about his food or talking about him himself, which wouldn't make a difference, right, for Shavua or Neder over here. But generally, we assume that most of the Lashonos here are Lashonos Neder because we're in the dorm. All right. Now, Menuda Anilacha. So if you use the term Menuda, Rabbi Kiva Yachuchik Baz Lahakmir. What's okay? Chuchik means you laugh. And then he would be, because it's a Suffolk Dorai, so he would be Machmir in this item that it is a Lashon Neder, and he would worry that you have made a Neder if you use the term Minudah. All right. All right, now the Gemara is just going to ask some technical questions, as it does in the beginning of many Masechtas, is why is the Mishnah written this way? Right, so the Gemara is going to ask, Kol kinei edin arim kinei nedarim. Maishna gabi nazir delo ktani luhu lukulu. Maishna gabi nedarim ktani lukulu. When you start naziros, which would be the next Masechta, all it says is, Kol kinei naziros kinei zirut. That's it. It doesn't mention charamim, shvuot, nedarim. It only mentions nazirot. Yet here, when you're starting nedarim, and by the lashon of the Masechta, it should just be nedarim. So why does the Masechta just begin? Kol kinei nedarim kinei nedarim. Why, but Nazir, does it only speak about the specific issue of Nazir, whereas over here it seems to address a much larger group of items. Neder, Shvua, Kinoi, Cherem. Why is that? So Kol Kinoi. What? And Nazir, right. Kol Kinoi, Nedarim, Kinoi, Maishna, Gabi, Nazir, Delok, Tani, Lehuk, Luku. Umaishna, Gabi, Nedarim, Tani, Luku. Bishom, the Neder, Shvua, Ktive, Gabi, Hadadi. In the Torah, Shvua and Neder are written together in the Pasuk. They're written together. And since they are written together in the Pasuk, therefore the Mishnah felt compelled, or the author of the Mishnah felt compelled to bring down both of them at the, to bring down both of them at the same time. So that, that's a position of the Mishnah. When you find something or a source similarly in the Pasukim, that the Bala Mishnah will bring down, both of them at the same time. So therefore, once we already started, we're already up to Neder and Shavuah because of the Pasuk. The Pasuk compelled us to bring down both Neder and Shavuah. So while we were at it, we figured we will be, once we get Neder and Shavuah, we may as well get the whole group in here. So it came into Tani Tarti and Tani Lukuhu. Since you already got two of them down, Neder and Shavuah, may as well get the whole grouping or the whole classification. And therefore they brought the whole class down, which is Cherem, Nizirus, Neder, and Shavuah. So you brought all of them down in order to include them in our Mishnah. So now the Gemara says, Velitne Kinoi Shavuah Bater Nidarim. Right, so if that's the case, right, then the Mishnah should have read Kol Kinoi Nedarim Kinedarim, and then Kol Kinoi Shvuot Kishvuot. And the Mishnah's order is Neder Cherem, then Shvuot, and then Nizirut. Why does it interject Cherem between Neder and Shvuot? The full reason that the Mishnah is now expanding to include four categories was because Neder and Shvuot, we were compelled to bring both of them down, then keep those two together. So here comes down to what we mentioned in the introduction. Either the Tanya Nedarim the Mitzar Chepta Alei. So here, we're talking about Neder, which restricts a chepet upon him. Tananan Chamoramim, the Mitzar Chepta Alei. Chayram works the same way. Chamoramim are talking about a specific object that you are restricting. When you say make something Chayram, it's Machlokas in the Maran Erchin, I think Maran Erchin is a machlokas about what a cherem, stam charam in Hashem or stam charam in the Kohanim. When you make something cherem, who does it belong to? Does that mean it's the equivalent of Kodesh and it belongs to Hashem, or is it equivalent of it's a gift to the Kohanim? So that's when you say stam charam. But there are two forms of cherem. There's going to be cherem in the Kohanim or cherem in Hashem, which is you're making this object now specifically or uniquely only usable either for Hashem or for the Kohanim. So you're speaking about an object. So therefore, they put Neder and cherem together, which both function on or both apply to the object. And then they brought down, right, Lapuke Shavua, the Ka'asar Nachim in a Chetzel. They exclude Shavua, which functions differently, which is that you, the Gavro, is restricting himself to the object, rather than the object being restricted to him. So that would explain now the order of the Mishnah. The Mishnah is first Neder, then Cherem, which is in a similar category to Neder, and then you switch over to Shavuah, right? And Nizirut, which are obligations of the Gavra, right? That's where the person himself is restricting himself on items, because that's where Nizirus works also, right? You accept, I mean, it's actually called a Neder, Nizirut, but you're really accepting, the person accepting himself Nizirut, and because he's a Nazir, he's now restricted in, right, cutting his hair, drinking wine, then they become, these objects are now asur to him. Alright, so now the Gemara works on this. Patach b'kinuyim. The Mishnah started, it says, Kol kinuyi nidarim, kinidarim, right? Then it goes on and does what? Then umafarish yadot. Right, I told you that the second half of the Mishnah is really not explaining kinuyim, but it's giving examples of yadot. Well, where did that transition happen in the Mishnah? Right, so that's it. So Kol kinuyi nidarim, umafarish yadot. Omer lechaver moder ani mimcha. Right, so that's one. The two, yadot ishi. So then also, yadot are missing, meaning that the word yadot is never mentioned in the Mishnah. Forget, first of all, they said kinuyim. And then we introduced kinuyim, and then we switch over to yadot. So that, first of all, you didn't even explain kinuyim. Number two is, the word yad is never mentioned in the Mishnah. Why are you bringing examples of yadot if the Mishnah never mentioned? So when I say it's Ayri Bahon, it really is... Right, exactly. Ayri Bahon, so it's a classic example. It really is talking about them, but Chasuri Maksura. It's missing words. In fact, wait, so it's missing some words here. V'hachik Tani, and this is what's written, Kol Kuni Nidarim Ki Nidarim. Right, that the all Nidarim... Kinuyim nidarim are like nidarim. Bina yadot nidarim kinidarim. So that's what's missing here. The word yadot, which should have been mentioned here, is also mentioned. Right? Then it goes on to explain yadot and nidarim. So the obvious question is what? It started with the kinuyim, then switched to, and then it says yadot, and then when it's explained, it explains yadot. So what's the obvious question now? Is why is there no explanation of what kinuyim are, right? If you're doing that, kinuyim, yadot, then explain kinuyim, then explain yadot. Why do we switch to yadot?
Or put yadot first.
Right. Alright, our first yadot first in the Mishnah, alright, either way, but that, it seems to be that the parallel structure of the Mishnah, right, is
now. As long as we're saying that it's missing, why don't we just say it's missing from before kinuyim? and it's not in its correct place.
Right. Generally, when we see chasurim extra, it's usually in a transition or a word that should have been, how people might askina, and what are we talking about here, what was the issue, but generally we don't say Chasurim Extra for something in the beginning. Like, we would assume that they didn't leave out words in the beginning, they got that right. It was in the middle somewhere, something got lost or edited out in the middle. Right, so here I would point out here that the Lashon, that this is where I was talking about, I thought that the Gemara here was unusual, that the Gemara went for a question like this, Homer Lechaveru Mudarani Mimcha, V'tu Yadot Inshi, I mean, so that's like a second question, and then Ayri Bahum. That answer, that's not a classical, this is personally, I don't know, when I was learning this last night, I just looked at it, I said, that's not classical, you find that, don't find this in other Gemaras like that. It's very, the way they're asking the questions, both the questions, and number two is then when they go to the answer, they just say, oh, Ayri Bahon, it really is dealing with that. That's not a lashon that you would find in other Gemaras. You might just go and say, Chasurei Maksura. Right? Not that Ayri Bahon, it really is dealing with it. That was something to me that jumped out at me as being something where more unusual lashon that may be different than in other Gemaras. So just to point that out, because you had mentioned it earlier. All right. So now the Gemara says, "Vakfani kol kinei nidarim kinei darim v'yadot kinei darim v'lefish kinei v'reisha." So the Gemara says, "How would the solid kinei?" No, that's a solid Mishnah writing. They start with kinuyim, then it mentions yadot, and then when it's mentioned yadot, it finishes off the topic of yadot, and then it comes back to kinuyim. So how mefarish v'reisha kinei? And the Gemara is now going to give numerous examples of Mishnayos throughout Shas that do exactly that. They'll say two items, and then from the second item, they'll begin to enumerate. So b'me madikim. This is very famous, we say it every Friday night, the second parak of Shabbos, v'me madikim, v'me ein madikim. Then the first examples are ein madikim. Right, we start off with examples of what we do not light with. V'me tomnim, v'me ein tomnim. So another parak of Shabbos, right, that when it says, what are you allowed to cover with, what are you not allowed to cover with? And then the examples are ein tomnim. Right, or not, we do not cover with these items. So again, what it left off with, it continues in the Mishnah. V'me yisha yotza, so again another parak in Shabbos. V'me ina yotza, what does a woman go out with? What can women not go out with? Lo teite yisha, what are the first examples of this? What a woman may not go out with. So Gemara says, behold, so is that really an established principle in Mishnayos? I mean, is that the way a Mishnah writes that it'll give, say, a general clause, which says here, this parak is going to discuss item one and item two, and then when it gets to item two, it explains item two, and then goes back to item one. Is that really the way Mishnayos are structured? Well, hey, from the Pagakhlam of Farish Bereisha, is that really true? So whatever it starts with, it does not explain first, but what it leaves off with. But it's not. And now the Mishnah is going to give a slew of examples where it's the opposite, meaning that the Mishnah will enumerate a general principles, and then we'll go back to the first principle to enumerate them. So we have here, Yesh Nochlin Uman Chilin. This is actually, right, we've seen this Mishnah, we saw it, it's from Baba Bash, we saw it also in Yevamos. Yesh Nochlin Uman Chilin, Nochlin Below Man Chilin, Ve'el. So there are those that Nochel, right, that can inherit, Uman Chilin, and they also give back, meaning that it's a two-way relationship. So, for instance, a father and a child and a son. Father and son are no klumim and klumim, right? Because they both can inherit from each other and they can inherit to each other, right? Or I don't know how you say that, and it's bequeath to each other. No klumim, below man klumim, they're those that inherit but do not bequeath, and that's like, for instance, a son and a mother, right? A son will inherit his mother, but the mother will not necessarily inherit the son, right? He won't know the yerushim, right? Because it goes through, it'll go to the father's side of the family, to his brothers and so. Alright, ve'elu, no klin, u'man kilin. And so what is the first example the Mishnah gives? No klin, u'man kilin. So it's going back to the first topic that the Mishnah discussed. Alright, so now here, from Yevamos, yesh muturot l'balehem v'asur l'yibbehem, muturot l'yibbehem v'asur l'balehem. We have examples where somewhere a wife could be mutar to her husband, but usur to her yabam. What's that? Since it's a kohen. Kohen's married to an almona. Kohen is allowed to marry an almona. His brother happens to be the kohen gadol. Kohen gadol is not able to marry an almona. So what do you have? You have a case where the woman is mutar to the one she's married to, but yet she'll be restricted to her yabam. Right? Or mutar to yabayim, usur to balayim. You have just the opposite, where a kohen gadol married an almona in restriction, right? Where he wasn't supposed to. So even though he's restricted to the kohen gadol, nevertheless, to the kohen himself, she's not restricted. The yabam, she's not. His brother was a regular kohen, she's not restricted. Now, what are the examples that Gemara gives first? Ve'elu, mutar to v'ayim, usur to yabayim. Again, went back to the first topic that the Mishnah mentioned. Yes, you know shemen ulubona, shemen below ulubona. Right, there's certain korbanot that require shemen, oil, and levona, and frankincense, shemen, below levona. There are others that only require oil and not levona. Right, so depending on the menachot or the which all these are talking about minachot and stuff like that, but which minach are you bringing? Right, well, the requirement for oil or the requirement for or for levona, and then there's minchas nesachim, right, which will require oil, but not levona. So these are different types of minachot that you have. They would you know shem and levona. Again, it goes back to the first example in the Mishnah. Yesh tunot hagasha v'en tunot tnufa. This again talking about minachot. In minachot, there's requirement, there's no shechting of a mincha. Right, so you have the kemitzas of mincha, which is you take out a portion of the mincha. But part of the process of mincha is, one is tnufa, a wave offering, you wave it up and down and around. And the other one is hagasha, that you take it and touch it to the side of the mizbeach, marit romit, to the southwestern side of the mizbeach, and you touch the mincha to that side of the mizbeach. So there's certain minachot that require hagasha, that require you touching the mizbeach, but ain't to know tnufa, but don't require a wave offering. Tnufa, but lo hagasha. There are those that require a wave offering, but not bringing them to the mizbeach. So one of the examples of you, a log shaman, if you bring a log shaman, requires tnufa, a wave offering, but not touching it to the mizbeach. If you bring a log of oil, just the oil. Whereas if you bring a carbon chute, I think is, carbon chute requires hagasha, touching it to the mizbeach, but does not require tnufa. They need to know hagasha. And these are the ones that need hagasha. Yesh b'chor l'nechala, they b'chor l'kohen. There's certain children that are born that are both the b'chor with regards to inheriting, but they're not a b'chor for kohen. B'chor l'kohen and b'chor l'nechala. Right? What's the requirement? Requirement for b'chor l'kohen is tekeh rechem. It has to be the first one that comes out of the mother's womb. B'chor l'nechala has to be a one that the libo davalav, that the father will actually draw or grow an attachment to that baby, so it has to survive for 30 days, it has to be outside the realm of Nafel, and has to live. So therefore, a miscarriage, for instance, might then disqualify the next baby from being a Bechor the Kohen to being a Bechor in terms of a requiring pigeon a ben, but that may still be a Bechor l'nachla, because since he's the first baby born, that's a living entity that survives, so therefore it'll be a Bechor l'nachla. So you have certain times where it's a Bechor the Kohen, and not Bechor l'nachla, vein Bechor the Kohen, which is what we just described. But other times where it's a Bechor the Kohen, vein Bechor l'nachla, meaning that in instance if he has multiple wives, right? Bechor since Yosef might have been a Bechor l'Kohen, but to Yaakov, he was not the Bechor l'Nachla because Reuben was the firstborn child for the father.
Right, so he shouldn't have been, but
right.
He
exactly. That's right. But Yikaret did. That would have been that. Bezu Bechor l'Nachla, main Bechor l'Kohen. Again, which the Mishnah goes back to explain the first situation, first cases. All right, so now, that's it. So now Gemara basically gave us a set of Mishnayos that look like our Mishnah here, which is that they started with the topics, they gave a klal about one topic, then another topic, and then they went on to explain the second topic first. Then the Mishnah Gemara brought down another set of Mishnayos that gave two topics, two general principles of topics, and then it went back to explain the first topic. So what do you see from this? You see that there is almost no, right, it seems that there's no run.
Do you see that? Because if it would have been presumably the second set are the more normal, because if that hadn't been, then it wouldn't have started on this whole track to begin with.
All right, whether normal or not, the Mishnah Gemara wants to know, meaning that either
more
one would be
more common.
Okay, right. I mean, either one would be valid. As the Rani even mentioned, it, either way would have been valid. The Gemara wants to know what. How does an author of a Mishnah write a Mishnah? Right? So the assumption
is
one. Is this really a standard? So the Gemara will always ask the question, meaning that even if it was one way was more normal than that, the Gemara will always try to test the other side. So even though if you would say that, even if you would suggest that this is the more normal way, the second set were the more normal way, then that's why the Gemara says, but even if the first set were the more normal way to write it, the Mishnah will try to test from the other set and will ask the question, even though they go, okay, but why did you choose this type of set and not the other set?
But is there anywhere in the Gemara that we've both gone through all...
All right, so Gemara's going to answer your question, right? Which is the right way to do it, or which is the more normal way to do it?
Yeah, well, does it... No, what I'm saying is that it asks this question because this seems to be...
Your assumption, right. So you're saying that the assumption is that the...
Is there anywhere else in the Gemara where it starts with what we would consider to be the right way and still asks this question, is this the right way of doing it?
Yeah, I think it does. I know you're challenging me, but I think it does.
I'm just wondering whether it does, because that would seem to be the normal...
The Gemara does challenge in other places, but Gemara's the Mishnah's order. And when they don't, Tosfos asks the question, why didn't the Gemara ask it? Why didn't the Gemara ask the question? But it does ask it. Alright, so then the Gemara says, but your question, I see what your question is. In these last sets, is the Gemara asking those last sets, why is this the order?
Exactly.
I can't remember.
I wouldn't have thought it does, because to me, that, you know.
It seems more normal, right? But that's to us, to our sense, our sensibilities, right?
We're not, we're doing their sensibilities. Well, if it's answering the question over here, then it doesn't make sense.
Right. Depends where in Shas, right?
Right.
It assumes you use this or not.
All right,
so now the Gemara says, no, Halein, the Gemara's going to first try to explain these differences. Mishom, the Abshule, Mefarish, right? How the Pata Parashah? Since there's Abshah means more, or a lot, right? So Mishom, the Abshule, Mefarish, the whole Pata Parashah explains those that it mentioned in the beginning. Right, so what does that mean, Abshah? So actually here we use Rashi. Rashi gives two interpretations of what Abshah means. Either it means, Abshah means that there were actually four, in these Mishnayos here, there are actually, the Gemara only quotes two, but actually, alright, you know, the one explanation is, I'm going to do the easier one, the first one Rashi explains is that there's, if you enumerate two items, there's a list of items. So each list of, the Gemara gives two general principles, say, Yesh b'chor l'nachla, the Shana b'chor l'koin, and b'chor l'koin, Shana b'chor l'nachla. And then it took, you have two categories, which list is longer? Alright, so the Abshah Mishlo means that in these instances, they took the longer list, and whichever was the longer list, right, they did that, they did those first. So that was it. So the Gemara says, they explained the one that they, since the list was longer, they explained the one that they opened with, they went back and explained, because that was the longer list of items.
That is actually the case.
Right, it is the case, but the Gemara will challenge that and say, well, we have an instance where that's not the case, meaning we have a Mishnah from the first set, where the list is longer, and yet it was brought second. Okay, so that's what I was going to say. That's the next question. But now the other possibility in Rashi is that Abshah Milsa means here, Abshah is that in the first Mishnayos, there were only two examples, which is, like say for instance, Vameh Malikim, Vameh Malikim. There are only two categories. In these second set of Mishnayos, there are actually usually three or four sets of, even though the Mishnah is only quoting them here, but there's something that there's, the Mishnah will go, for instance, by Yavama, that there's some that are mutter to their bow and asur the yavam. Mutter the yavam, asur the bow. Then there'll be something mutter the yavam and the bow, and asur the bow and the yavam. There's four permutations rather than simply two permutations. And that direction says that it's asur, that Abshah Milsa here means that there are more numerous permutations than there than two. So that's Gemara says. Now the Gemara's challenges. But what about Baha Behema Behema Yotza Ubama Eno Yotza Delo Abshah? That's the case where it's not extensive. Migtani Yotze Gamal. Right, so then here, there's one exception. We quoted all the Mishnahs and Shabbos, which were Bameh Madikim, Bameh Tomnim, and Bameh Yisha Yotza. They left out one parak, which is Bameh Behema Yotza. Where's the, right, so what does the Behema go out with? Bameh in a Yotza. The Lo Avshal, there it's clear that the list is not longer for either Rashi. It's two possibilities. Either there's only two permutations, not four permutations, or possibilities that Behema Yotza, what the animal goes out with is a shorter list than what an animal may not go out with. And what's the first thing the Mishnah explains? Kind of Yotze Gamal. The first thing explains is what it does go out with, so that explanation will fail also. Elav Davka. So that's Gemara's answer. Gemara's answer is that there is no set policy. Right? There is no proper etiquette in writing Mishnayos. Right? Zimnin the Mefarish Hau the Pata Farisha. Zimnin the Hadassalik Mefarish Farisha. Sometimes it goes after the one he started with, and sometimes it goes after the one that he ended with, and therefore both of them are considered proper etiquette in Mishnayos, and therefore you can't draw any conclusions from either set because we haven't come up with a standard explanation for why each set is separate or done differently. The Gemara says Ibayis Emo. There's another possibility of explaining our Mishnah, and what is that? So they can explain why our Mishnah has this particular order. Not necessarily why the other Mishnah has to, but why this Mishnah has this particular order. It's because Ibayis Yados, I did the Atyun Midrasha, Yados, which are not straight explicitly mentioned in the Pasuk. They come out of a Drasha, Mefarsh Lehum Bereisha. Explain them first. Because it's that the Gemara does say in other places, that Bishum de Chavivaleh, since it's beloved, since it comes out of a Drasha, it's not explicit in a Pasuk, it's not easily understood as something straightforward. It comes through a Drasha, right, through a Limud, having to be learned out. Therefore, it's more chaviv, it's more beloved to them, and therefore he continues to talk about it. The Gemara says, or if that's the case, what's the obvious question? If it's so beloved, write that first. Right. The Gemara says, no. It opens with kinuyin, which is something that comes out of the puzzle, something that everybody would know. So if you want to start, you start off with a general principle which everybody's familiar with, and then you move from the item that is familiar or would be easily understood from the psukim, then you move on, then you move to the item which is would be less explicit or less understood by itself, and then atyan lame drasha, and then once you've come to the drasha, you continue along with the drasha. I mean, a similar question, just even in Brachos. The Gemara asks, right? The Gemara wants to know what time is Zman Kriyat, right? What time according to Shema? And the Gemara asks the obvious question is, how do you know you read Shema? And why is the Gemara asking when do you read Shema? But until when do you read Shema? How do you know that you do read Shema? And the Gemara answers up, right? That should be Ubishach B'chol Kumecha. That's an explicit pasuk that you don't even need someone to tell you about. I mean, that everybody, the underlying assumption in the Mishnah is that you know the Torah, right? So Ubishach B'chol Kumecha, everybody knows you need to read Kriyat Shema. Now it's just a question of timing. So also over here, you don't need Ikar Nidarem. Ikar Nidarem, that's written in the Torah, right? That B'chol Ned B'chol Shvuah. Right, those are written in the Torah. But we do need an explanation from his kinuya in the Darim, which are slight variations on the Ikar Neder, even though it's functioning like the Min Neder, it's a slight variation, so we explain that first, which is something that would be an obvious derivative of the Torah's Neder and Shua. And then we switch to Yadot, which seems to be a far-fetched connection, like a Yad is, right? I mean, a more distant way to create Neder. Once we created Neder and Shua through Yadot, it went on to continue to explain Yadot and Shua that way.